Okay, hi everybody. And let me just get myself in a little better position here. I have a little bit of time, maybe not the full hour, to work with program number 52 in our externalization of the hierarchy work. So sometimes you'll see my face in the beginning a little bit longer than it should be. And as soon as I figure out how to manage that, I will do it. All right, we have come to the point where we're talking about the work of the price today. We're on page 472. And we are then going to deal with the coming work of reconstruction. If I have to let off at around 45 minutes, then I have to do that. We have a broadcast tonight on Ascension Day, and everything has to be made ready. Of course, by the time you get here, it will have been years ago. All right. The work of the Christ today and the coming work of reconstruction. These two convey the same basic idea and thus complement each other. They proclaim the fact that all that truly concerns us is that which takes place upon earth in line with the blueprints which guide the work of the Christ. Well, basically what we have here is a story of archetypes. When I use the phrase concerns us, I refer to man's physical, emotional, and mental reactions. They proclaim the fact that every state of consciousness is anchored within humanity, and that all are factual here and now, did men but know it. Meaning that all of those states are precisely here, if we could attune to them. They are not somewhere else, and the planes do interpenetrate. We have to remember that. They proclaim also the truth that the Christ has never left us. For a distant heaven of nebulous outlines, and that he is ever within our reach. And that is something that perhaps the average believer does not realize. They proclaim also the fact that his interest, his arduous labors, are on behalf of the activities of his working disciples, the masters of the wisdom and the lords of compassion, are with us here and now. The here and now part is something that seems so remote when we are blinded by material factors. Blinded by this aggregation of units of matter. And we just don't see. We just do not see as otherwise we could. They proclaim that we are not alone, but that the forces of light and enlightenment are constantly working, that the strength and the wisdom of those who know are being mobilized to aid mankind, and that nothing can now arrest or prevent the contact between that intelligent, aspiring center called humanity and the inner spiritual group, the hierarchy. So, eventual union is inevitable. And as you see, every time I press my my E, it gives me more than I want. All right. The work of the Christ today. Forget not one important point. The hierarchy itself is the result of human activity and aspiration. It has been created by humanity. Its members are human beings who have lived, suffered, achieved, failed, attained success, endured death, and passed through the experience of resurrection. Well, maybe all of these states mentioned did not occur on Earth per se. They may have occurred on the moon chain, they may have occurred in the previous solar system, but they did occur for all those who have struggled their way into the spiritual hierarchy. And some, of course, are Earth humanity. Those are the very vanguard of Earth humanity, such as the Christ is. The hierarchy itself is the result of human activity and aspiration. Every high being has experienced monadic retraction, or shall we call it emanative retraction? And all, whether they are from earlier centers and systems, have lived, suffered, achieved, failed, attained success, endured death, and passed through the experience of resurrection, which the first of which experiences takes them into mastership in short order. It wasn't long after the resurrection, first resurrection of the initiate Jesus, that through his disciple Apollonius of Tyana, he attained mastership. So mastership, full membership within the spiritual hierarchy of our planet, follows swiftly upon that first resurrection. The true resurrection is the seventh initiation, a kind of higher ascension than the sixth. The ascension that we read about in the Bible is the sixth initiation. Just as the Buddha experienced this without leaving his physical form. Extraordinary thought. So all these experiences, they, the hierarchy, are the same in nature as those who struggle today with the processes of disintegration, but who nevertheless have in them the seed of resurrection. So the idea that hierarchy is indeed as we are, but they have added to their abilities many powers which come to them as they refine the vehicles and sacrifice on behalf of humanity. All states of consciousness are known to them. Well, I mean, those pretty much on the cosmic physical plane, leading to the atmic plane, at least that, and quite a bit in the monadic plane. All states of consciousness are known to them, and they have mastered all of them. They have mastered them as men. Well, the highest the category of men goes is the fifth initiation. And of the Chohans, it says in one of the rules, is it rule six or probably rule six? In rays and initiations, it says of the masters, of the Chohans, they are no longer men as are the masters. So the five-pointed star indicates the peak of mastery carried out by a man. They are still members of the fourth creative hierarchy, even as they move into Chohanship. They have mastered them as men, thus guaranteeing to humanity the same ultimate achievement, not immediately, of course. I always encourage myself by the statement, what man has done, man can do. And nothing is impossible. It's just a question of time, right timing. All things are possible. And in fact, exist in absolute infinity. That is, in the transcendental, super universal God. Guaranteeing to humanity the same ultimate achievement, we are apt to look upon the members of the hierarchy, page 473, as different radically from humanity, forgetting that the hierarchy is a community of successful men who earlier submitted themselves to the purificatory fires of daily living, working out their own salvation as men and women of affairs, as business people, as husbands and wives, farmers, he must have someone in mind there, and rulers, and that they know life, therefore, in all its phases and gradation. This is something, of course, when we worship the Christ and worship the masters, we tend to forget. We place a barrier of admiration and devotion between ourselves and them, and it's just not true. All of us are masters in the making and more, and every being is essentially the universal logos and more. But that gets us into some pretty wide-ranging philosophy, which I interject now and then. Can't help it, I guess. Okay. They have surmounted the experiences of life. Their great master is the Christ, and the Tibetan has often said he considers himself one of the lowliest friends of the Christ, and he refers to the Christ as his master. Of course, in another way, Master Kuthumi is the master of the great second ray ashram in which the Tibetan works. But I ran into some statements by the Tibetan which called the Christ his master. They have passed through the initiations of the new birth, the baptism, the transfiguration, the final crucifixion and the resurrection. Here, the resurrection is listed sort of as the transit from the fourth degree to the fifth, but the true resurrection initiation we keep in mind is rising to the heights of Shambhala on the logoic plane at the symbolic right hand of the Father. So in this sense, the masters are as we are, essentially, but their attainment is far greater than our own at this point in time. And one day we too shall attain, because the need is there and we are on the path of emanative retraction. It's not an involutionary path, it's an evolutionary path. But they still are men and differ from the Christ only in the fact that he, the first of our humanity to attain divinity, divinity, I suppose, referring to the second subplane and the first subplane of the cosmic physical plane, the first of our humanity to attain divinity, the eldest in a great family of brothers, the eldest in terms of spiritual unfoldment, as St. Paul expresses it, the master of the masters and the teacher of angels and of men, was deemed so pure, so holy, and so enlightened that he was permitted to embody for us the great cosmic principle of love, just as the Buddha embodied the cosmic principle of wisdom and of cosmic mind. He thus revealed to us for the first time the nature of the heart of God. This is a very beautiful idea here, and one that we should take to heart. Think of the attainment of the Christ. It must be that Sanat Kumara made the judgment, and that the Christ was deemed so pure in the eyes of the planetary logos, so holy and so enlightened, that he was permitted. See, all comes under the question of permission, allowance. He was permitted to embody for us the great cosmic principle of love. He will be, maybe, you know, is now in a sense, on the ray path. And I think when he finally takes the seventh initiation, he will be seen or experienced as a great cosmic principle of love, a ray. And this divine fate which awaits him will lead eventually to the star Sirius and to the fourth cosmic path. So in this case, from the fifth or ray path to the fourth path on Sirius. He's already considered a type of initiate in relation to the great star Sirius. But we have to remember his humility in the statement, "Why call you me good? Only God is good." So let us keep a sense of proportion about all this and realize that before us lies attainment, not in any ambitious sense, because it is not granted to those who want it for themselves only, as kind of a feather in the cap, an act of pride. No. To those who sacrifice everything, the attainment comes. These perfected men, therefore, exist. They are more than men because the divine spirit in them registers all stages of consciousness and awareness, subhuman, human, and superhuman. Their consciousness pervades all this. Where is the Christ? In a sense, here, now, and through all kingdoms. This inclusive development enables them to work with men, to contact humanity at need, and to know how to lead us forward towards the phases of resurrection. You see, maybe the first phase occurs at the fourth initiation, but there is a phase, certainly, connected with the seventh initiation, and is a major solar initiation. It's a kind of mastership or fifth initiation if we begin, do we? Let's see if that works, with the transfiguration, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, yes. It's a kind of mastership in the solar hierarchy of initiations. So many of us have not attained even the first solar initiation and are busy trying to understand and execute and apply the initiations of the threshold. There is no need, says the Tibetan, for me to enlarge at this point upon the world that they are attempting to aid and to salvage. The state of humanity today is known to all thinking people. Devastation. Notice the deva in the devastation. Crucifixion, slaughter, and death are widespread. Sorrow, pain, disillusionment, and pessimism are conditioning the thinking and the reactions of millions, whilst the plight of the unthinking but helpless masses has reached an inconceivable height of misery. Well, the war is almost over, as he writes, but still the psychological effects and the physical effects, mental effects, are there and have been established and need rehabilitation. The ignorance, lack of understanding, the selfishness of men everywhere, particularly in the countries which have escaped the ravages of war, aggravate the situation. Maybe some of the neutral countries, United States, Sweden, Switzerland. Maybe there are other neutrals that displayed selfishness at first rather than engagement. Nevertheless, with serenity and confidence, the hierarchy today faces its arduous task. So the state of humanity was sad, very sad, and still is sad in many ways, as this almost planned reversion to lesser states of spirituality is taking place today, or at least threatening to take place. One aspect of their work and attitude I would like to touch upon, for it is apt to cause misunderstanding among those with narrow vision, you know, page 474, and if I may describe them, with constricted, though loving hearts. I refer to the attitude taken by the hierarchy during the past years of war. This attitude has caused some to find in it cause for criticism. Let me be explicit and also bring in the time equation. I can well do so because it was through my writings that the position of the hierarchy was affirmed and publicly stated. So misunderstanding has been the lot of certain human beings who may be expected more of the hierarchy, or they would think more active, visible intervention on the side of the good, little realizing what was actually done behind the scenes to help the good prevail. In 1932, writes the Tibetan, I wrote a series of pamphlets which were intended to mobilize the disciples of the world under the name of the New Group of World Servers and to arouse the men and women of goodwill in a final effort to awaken humanity to the need for change. I guess we didn't pay sufficient attention. They tried to avert the outbreak of war upon the physical plane with all of its inevitable suffering. I endeavored to institute a worldwide house cleaning and to incite men to take the steps which were needed to avert war, a war which the hierarchy saw coming closer day by day. And, Master Moria was doing something similar as he talked about obsession and the epidemic of obsession, which was afflicting humanity. In a way unrealized and undreamt of by the average man, the forces of evil were in a most potent manner emerging from their ancient lair. Shall we call it Marakara, the place of Mara, of illusion, of evil? Even now in our language, to mar is to somehow afflict, damage. And Kara means the place of. The forces of evil were in a most potent manner emerging from their ancient lair. Sounds ghastly. Sounds like some of these scenes one sees in such movies with astonishing special effects, like The Lord of the Rings. They were intent upon seeking those whom they could mold and obsess, there's that word, and thus hurry mankind towards disaster. Yeah. And this was not realized, no. Not at all realized. They found minds responsive to their evil promptings in every country. Note, in every country. There were many Nazi sympathizers in the United States, many. And some who sought the overthrow of, let's say, the democratic way of governance. Although, strangely, the Nazi Party was elected into power by a democratic process, which does not mean that coercion was not used behind the scenes. They found mind responsive to their evil promptings in every country. They found also that it was possible to take possession of two countries, Japan and Germany, and to a very much less extent of Italy. So he spares Italy of that particular judgment. And indeed, the partisans, the enemies of fascism in Italy did overthrow the fascist powers in the end. This was not the case in Germany. It was not the case in Japan. Intervention from the outside was needed. Through Russia and the United States, and in the Far East, through the United States. The hierarchy, foreseeing this, attempted to offset their efforts. They made appeal to the spiritually minded people of the world. Their appeal reached millions and culminated in May 1936 in a planetary effort wherein the Great Invocation was used upon a large scale in most countries of the world. Now, this was the first Great Invocation, let the forces of light bring illumination to mankind. For another 3 years, their labor of love continued. They struggled to save humanity and to arouse men to their imminent peril. They endeavored to arrest the selfishness of humanity and to produce a new and fresh orientation to the spiritual values and thus avert war. They failed. Well, this is a very frank assessment. No matter how hard hierarchy tried, within the law and with the forces at their disposal, abundant forces, still the effort did not succeed. They failed. The men and women of goodwill and the spiritually minded people could not appreciate the true nature of the impending danger. Some recognized it and did their utmost. A few worked hard, trusting to the wisdom, page 475, of those who knew and asked their aid. Most of them were disturbed and worried, but none of them appreciated properly the double danger with which humanity was faced. So this is the kind of thing that one expects in the new installment and historical retrospective of the some 70 years, 75 years we will have lived through since the Tibetan did his last dictating with Alice Bailey. So a double danger with which humanity was faced. This is the story of failure. After a great effort, they gave their all. Hierarchy gave its all to help humanity take the needed steps to recognize the danger. What is this double danger? The danger arising out of human selfishness and greed, plus the danger which was nearing the earth through the agencies of the combined forces of evil. Apparently, they got together in such a way that they could be more powerful. They may have fear and respect with regard to each other. They don't have love, but they could see the need to combine their forces, to even have a chance to overcome humanity. These forces were organized by beings of most evil and expert experience, and we're preparing to obsess and ultimately possess the negative German people ruled by a group of men of such positive selfishness and aggressive materialistic spirit that they could easily become the agents of the subjective evil forces. And what we have here is what the Tibetan has called later Hitler and his evil gang. I think seven altogether, a force which could pervert and invert the Shambhala, the Shambhala force. So, you know, as always, humanity not awakening in time, playing with fire, and not realizing the danger of its own selfishness, the danger of the approaching evil forces. The Tibetan does not exaggerate. He is talking about the danger of obsession, of which Master Moria wrote, the epidemic of obsession, and the great evil of these forces of evil. Not just planetary evil, but cosmic evil entering as well. We'll see, you know, whether I'm able to, you know, continue this or have to stop at about 45 minutes. What would we have done in the face of all this? Were we even there, perhaps? Anyway, what hierarchy had hoped, the rallying of goodwill, and the positive goodness among the new group of world servers was not strong enough. In September 1939, I suppose this is the invasion of Poland by the Nazi powers, you know, after taking over Czechoslovakia, supreme wickedness broke loose upon Earth because the hierarchy could not and would not infringe upon human free will the evil which humanity itself had engendered, manifested itself, and that to which certain nations and certain individuals had responded appeared, and thus World War II started. Supreme evil sounds cosmic in its nature, a very deliberate evil, not simply the evil based upon ignorance. This was a cultivated evil by those who had been initiates in the previous solar system and didn't want to give up their prerogatives, as they would inevitably do to a certain extent if they moved towards the cultivation of love. Rampant evil took possession of the earth through the medium of the Axis nations. The Germans marched into Poland. This country was the recipient of the first impact because of her national selfishness, her suppression of the lower classes, her exaltation of a fascist-minded aristocracy, and her hatred of the Jews. The United Nations then began slowly to organize under the impression of the forces of light, and the war was on. Rampant. It reminds one of areas we have to remember that the soul nature of Germany is ruled by areas, and when the personality takes over the soul energy, the results are not in line with the plan. Rampant evil took possession of the earth through the medium of the Axis nations. And meanwhile, I think, you know, the work of Japan to invade China was well underway. And then Japan made the great mistake of taking on the United States directly. And the United States ended up fighting a two-front war, one in the theater of the East and one in the theater of the West. And that's usually destined for failure. But in this particular case, it was manageable. Germany, through its ambition, also took on a two-front war, one against Russia and one against the allied powers of the West, and it did not succeed. But then it was on the side of evil, and its resources were less, and its guidance by a somewhat ignorant megalomaniac, Hitler, was insufficient militarily, and in fact was deleterious to the cause. He just didn't listen to his generals. The megalomaniac cannot stand someone in an expert position and thinks that all wisdom resides within himself. We have a situation like that occurring now. What, under these circumstances, was hierarchy to do? Full opportunity had been given to humanity to arrest the descent of evil into manifestation. Voices of leaders and humanitarians everywhere were proclaiming the need for reform. On which side should the hierarchy throw its weight and its influence? Should it take sides at all, or should it remain or be neutral? Should it remain aloof and take the position of the onlooker, of the observer? Should it stand superior to the deeds of mankind and await the decision of the battle to be fought? Should it conform to the sentimental ideas of the church, train public and talk peace, peace, when there was no peace, and present a negative aspect of love to all peoples while hatred strode rampant over the earth? You know, the hateful marching troops with their jackboots and their particular goose stepping, showing rigidity, mechanism. What should hierarchy do in such a case? What was hierarchy to do? There were many options, were there not? And some choice was inescapable. Humanity had failed to arrest the descent of evil into manifestation. And and hierarchy had to obey the law coming to them from the Great Lodge on Sirius. They cannot break the law of freedom. They cannot interpose themselves on the karma that arose due to the decision of humanity as a whole. But they are extremely sensitive to the best way to proceed. It must be remembered that if this war had resembled other wars down the centuries and had simply been a fight between human groups and nations, the hierarchy would have remained outside the conflict and left humanity to fight a conclusive victory on the merits of its fighting units. You know, the humanity is a warring kingdom. This tells us the nature of the fourth creative hierarchy in the fourth kingdom. But this time, a great deal more was involved. And this the hierarchy knew. This war has not only been an aggressive conflict between nations, or of hate between exponents of differing ideologies, but something far more serious. And even today, one wonders whether the subjective seriousness of this great war from 1914 to 1945, and especially from 1939 to 1945, is appreciated. People are not esotericists, even students of esotericism. They're not students of the true occult, of the spiritual occult, though they fear the malevolent occult. And they really have no idea of how close it was, the defeat of humanity. They're going down to defeat. The hierarchy knew that extremely powerful forces were taking advantage of human stupidity to intrude into world affairs, and that potent groups of evil beings were organized to exploit the existing world situation. Well, as he has talked about the Black Lodge, six leaders in the East, more experienced, six leaders in the West. And there were some pretty terrible representatives of cosmic evil in Atlantean times, too. And this was in the period of giantism. There were giants in those days. It must have been a ghastly war at the time. I suppose culminating on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, south of Delhi, what is Delhi, India today, New Delhi. They knew also that the combination of ancient evil with men's selfishness would inevitably prove too strong for even the United Nations if they were left unassisted to meet the Axis powers and the lords of evil emerging from their hiding place. Maybe there's a lot of glamour around that idea of the lords of evil, but okay. They existed and to this day exist. And as DK tells us, speculation anent them is both fruitless and dangerous. So the hierarchy took its stand upon the side of the United Nations and let it be known that it had done so. In doing this, definite physical steps were taken to aid the forces of light. men and leaders were carefully chosen, and picked disciples were placed in positions of power and of authority. So humanity would have gone down to destruction, and even at a point, hierarchy thought so. But the hierarchy took its stand on behalf of the forces of light as represented within the fighting forces of humanity, the allied forces, as they have been called. The leaders of the United Nations and of their armies are not godless men, as are the leaders of the Axis powers. Notice the present tense. They are men of rectitude and of spiritual and humanitarian purpose, and are able to work, consciously or unconsciously, under the inspiration of the hierarchy. This has been amply demonstrated. On account of this decision of the hierarchy, Christ became automatically the leader of these forces, the forces of light, the allied forces, the forces ranged against the Axis powers. Well, it seems a long time ago. But will there be a third world war? Well, Foster Bailey was assured there would not be, he says, an atomic war, a precipitated war upon the dense physical plane. It would be a terrible war, sparked on, prodded on by religious fanaticism, probably the most terrible war we've ever witnessed. But perhaps it can be retained upon the psychological level. It is, even now, raging. So, the Christ, the leader of the forces of light, this is what he became. Automatically so. And generals and leaders, Roosevelt, Churchill, Patton as a general, Eisenhower, probably Zhukov, as harsh as he was, and Stalin too played his part. They were not godless men, apparently, and could respond somewhat efficiently, somewhat wisely to the inspiration of hierarchy. But, okay, about Christ. His work has been greatly hindered by the sweet sentimentality of the unthinking Christian and by the well-meaning but oft unintelligent pacifist. Both these groups would sacrifice the future of humanity to temporary methods of being nice, of being kind, or taking gentle measures. I think, under the Stalin regime, they were called useful idiots. They acted in a way which was counter to their own welfare. The forces of evil stalking the world, notice those words. They seem monstrous, animalistic. The forces of evil stalking the world today do not understand such measures. The cry of such people that God loves all men is true, eternally and forever true. It is one of the unalterable facts of existence itself. God loves without distinction and irrespective of race and creed. To that great life, naught matters but humanity and its perfecting, because upon humanity depends the salvation of all kingdoms in nature. Those, that is, that need to be saved, the subhuman kingdoms. It would be hard to imagine that the superior kingdoms depend upon humanity for salvation. But in this statement, made in time and space, and as it concerns the form aspect and not the spirit of man, this statement is frequently misleading. And the simple mind that are apt to forget that Christ said, "He that is not with me is against me." So sweet sentimentality is an obstructive force then and now. And coddling of dictators who have no good intention towards humanity must not be permitted. Ours is a warring kingdom, and the forces of light must prevail. Men fail also to realize the potency of the thought wielded by those who work under and with the Christ. Thought is pure divine energy, impersonal and like the sun. It pours down upon the worthy and the unworthy, unless definitely and deliberately directed. The rays of the sun pour forth upon the just and the unjust. Not an easy task for the hierarchy. And we are blessed that they care. And one day we, in such a position, will also care for those who are struggling through similar circumstances. There will be great battles at the time of the judgment day, maybe unlike anything we have witnessed. They will take place on inner planes, these battles, and perhaps we will be in a position to assist. So the hierarchy was therefore faced with the problem and the necessity of seeing that impersonal thought energy did not find its way into the ranks of those fighting human freedoms, for it stimulates the minds and the mental processes of the good and bad alike. This danger they deliberately offset by directing their thought to the forces fighting under the leaders of the United Nations, and by openly taking their stand upon the side of right human relations. So, hierarchy understood the implications of taking sides. It was also to prevent the destruction of humanity and of other, eventually of other kingdoms in nature. They had to direct pure thought energy specifically and not let it enter the layers of those fighting against the welfare of humanity, fighting against the precipitation of the divine plan. They did not, says the Tibetan, dare to do otherwise, for in their place and given circumstances, the leaders of the forces of evil have proved themselves cleverer and more calculating than those fighting for human freedom. It seems always the way the evil manifests first. And the good, those subject to the good, are rather slow to react as a whole. It is this distinction and its necessity that some kindly and well-intentioned but ignorant Christian thinkers often overlook. So this is a warning that sentimentality, thinking according to liking and disliking, really valuing the form over the principle, that's what it boils down to, that is not allowed. The work of the Christ in relation to the war has also been handicapped by the commercially minded in all nations, particularly in the neutral countries, who have profited by the war, as well as by big business interests in many lands. Just as some are profiting today by this horrid outbreak of the coronavirus, which I think is really just beginning at this time and not coming to a hoped for conclusion. These are focused at this time through certain moneyed groups in every powerful nation, particularly the United States. He, the Christ, has been hindered also by those individuals who seek to exploit the plight of suffering humanity to their own financial advantage. So we're on page 478, and I think it's time to conclude this little program. I guess I had a little more time than I thought. We have very soon an Ascension Day broadcast. We're really, celebrating the sixth initiation of the Christ and the possibility of ascension for all one day. 472 to 478. And we'll take it down here so I don't get lost next time. Excuse me. Right here. So, this is the end of program 52, and about 1 hour, and from 472 to 478, on the 21st of May, and we'll begin with program 53 when we can. It's a long haul, 1 hour and X minutes, and it'll be 478, and the date is not known. The date is not known when we shall do this. But okay, thank you for being here and for thinking historically together about the antecedents of the condition in which we now exist, this recrudescence of the dictatorial state of mind and the hope on the part of some that a totalitarian method of governance will again seize power with them at the helm of power. This somehow we cannot allow. We cannot be weak. We cannot be as weak as were the men and women of goodwill before the Second World War. I mean, many tried. It just wasn't sufficient. This time, the strength has to be sufficient. So, I'll close this down, and we'll resume later. Love and many blessings.